So it's either this or we talk about incest.
Like human incest?
Yes.
I don't want to talk about
that. Which one?
I don't want to talk about any of it. Honestly, I go away for a week, maybe coming on two now, and yep. I've seen wildlife and been experiencing nature, and all of a sudden I get this message from Dave, and he's like, oh, I've read this article, I really want to interview this guy, but I don't want to tell you anything about it, because,
funny.
I guess you didn't want me to gross out in the first 5 minutes of you talking about it.
No, I didn't want to not be able to capture your reaction. Let's do the intro first.
Okay.
This episode.
Now cut.
No. Okay.
Welcome to Interrupting Kinnear.
I like it. Let's go.
Okay. So, this is a cool episode because we got Dr. Eugene McCarthy. And he was nice enough to talk to us. Just randomly, I emailed him because I wanted to talk about his hypothesis because it's kind of crazy. And I thought Rachel would like it. And all she kept saying was barf. So so he's going to talk to us about human origins and what he thinks. His hypothesis is a hybrid human origin between... drum roll. Between chimps and pigs. Yeah, so originally I was like, what is going on here? What is he talking about? Before I talked to him. And it kind of seems like, if you look into it, kind of seems like anomaly hunting, where you're just picking all these characteristics that match up between a human and a pig and saying they're also ones that aren't in a chimp, so is a result of a hybrid. He's gone a lot deeper into it. He has explanations of why, for each thing, why that could be. Like, he concedes it could be convergent evolution is the one big thing. So two similar species can come and find the same way of doing something. It doesn't mean that it's a related trait. It just, like, bats have wings and birds have wings. They didn't have to be a hybrid to get them. That's convergent evolution.
Okay.
A dolphin looks like a shark, but they're completely separate. They just happen to live in the same ecosystem, so they have the same... characteristics. They have all the same characteristics to be streamlined and shaped and colored the same way.
An evil.
Dolphins or sharks?
Both.
I don't think any animal is evil.
Great whites are mean. Hammerheads are weird.
Cool. Coolest fish.
I like basking sharks, but dolphins. I met a girl traveling who told me she did that swimming with dolphins thing, and she said it was like the worst hour of her life.
Why?
She said they were mean. Anyway.
Well, I think I know what you're talking about. So apparently they try and mate with human females.
That's what she said. I wasn't going to say it, but that's what she said.
They try to? With her? That's, like, confirmed?
She said that they were interested in doing stuff.
Wow.
But moving on.
Okay. Where were we? So, how do you feel? How do you feel about this episode?
Barf. That's how
barf?
I feel about it. Barf.
Why?
Because I don't want to talk about that kind of thing. Okay, here's why.
Okay.
Pigs are cute.
Yeah.
Monkeys are cute.
Yeah.
The creation of life, it's cute.
Chimps on a monkey.
Chimps on monkey, not cute. What?
Chimp's not a monkey.
Stop it. You're being a pedant now. Just stop.
There's a big difference.
whatever.
Go on.
In my basic terms, all I'm seeing is a chimp doing the nasty with a pig. And so if the result of that is a human baby, it's a little disturbing.
Okay, so he'll clear that up, but it's not that. It's not a chimp and a pig have a human baby. It's they have a baby that's a crossbreed, and then the backbreeding with the rest of the chimps causes the traits that come out into a separate species called human.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Okay, so you want to listen?
Okay.
Okay, here we go.
Hello?
Hi, Gene.
Hi, Dave?
Yeah, it's Dave and Rachel.
Hi, Rachel.
Hi, good morning.
Hi. Okay. Okay, so what did you want to talk about first? Just like the general theory, sort of aspects of it, or the human?
We can go from the general to the human. I mean, I think the human's the interesting one, yeah.
Okay, well, I could talk a little bit about that. I guess maybe I could tell it like a little story. Years ago, I'm 58 now, but years ago, like when I was 30 or even maybe a little before, I was reading, rereading The Origin of Species, and kind of talks about hybrids to use them to discount the idea that God is kind of behind everything. And the ancient idea is that somehow hybrids have been made sterile to preserve the species from mixing.
Yeah.
And so he was just picking away at that idea of God guiding everything by showing that there are a lot of hybrids that are fertile, and there are a lot of crosses where if you do it in one direction, say you cross a stallion with a she-ass, then you get a different result from if you reverse the cross and do it with a jackass and a mare.
Yeah.
Just lots of different exceptions to the various rules. And so anyway, that got me thinking about hybrids and what are going to be the results if you have all these fertile exceptions that he talked about. And so I started investigating it more. And this, again, was quite a long time ago, probably the mid-80s.
Okay.
when I started thinking about humans in that regard. And I, saw these sort of methods that people were using to identify unknown hybrids, and some bird that they found out in the woods, and they wanted to find out, what the parents were possibly. And so I just applied those same methods to humans. At the same time, though, I was thinking about the role of hybridization in evolution and what the consequences would be of having all these fertile hybrids that Darwin talked about. And I learned that really there are lots and lots of hybrids that can produce offspring.
Yeah.
And that they occur in a natural setting, and it's not rare as people suggest that it is. I mean, in my book on hybrid birds that I did for Oxford, there are about 5,000 different types of hybrid crosses between birds that are listed there, and probably about half of those occur in a natural setting. And if you look at the ratio of crosses that produce fertile hybrids to ones that produce ones that are really definitely sterile, that's maybe a ratio of about 8-1 fertile to sterile hybrids.
Oh, wow.
So it's really most of them can at least occasionally produce offspring for the ones where you actually have data on that.
Was there something special with birds then, or is that?
No, I don't think so, because I've compiled and looked through an equally huge number of papers, reports on mammalian hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots and lots of them that produce hybrids that in turn can produce offspring themselves. The only thing that's really, I think, distinctively different about mammals and birds is that in birds, since the female sex in birds is the heterozygous sex, you have a lot more female hybrids that are rare or sterile. And then in mammals, the male hybrids are more likely to be sterile or rare.
Okay.
What it means is that in both cases, you can get back crosses from one sex to the other. In birds, you can get back crosses from fertile males, whereas in mammals, you can get back crosses from fertile females.
What?
Explain back cross.
Okay, yeah, that's a good one to explain. Say the birds he's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You breed them together and you get mostly infertile males, but a fertile female.
Mm-hmm.
And then you back cross that female with the original males of the original species.
Okay.
To do it again. So that's back crossing. So you're going back to the originals. It's something you would do in trying to breed traits into something.
Okay. Like horses and stuff.
Yeah, or plants or whatever, right? Anything that you want to breed a certain characteristic in. You have this one animal that you found. You're like, okay, we want this characteristic. We breed it back to the original animal to try and get more of that characteristic, to get then more fertile and fertile offspring.
Okay.
What are you saying with the hybrids?
Okay.
Are there more species of birds than mammals?
Except,
that might be one factor.
Except I would say, I guess I just have personal objections to the idea of using the word species because it's not very well defined. But there are about 8,000 different types of birds treated as species, whereas there are about 4,000 mammals.
Okay.
I think it's something like 25,000 for fish.
Oh, wow.
And there are certain categories, I think just because they're not as well studied, where, there are fewer hybrids that are actually reported.
Mm-hmm.
Say, like, there are a lot fewer hybrids reported for bats, say, than there are for rodents or for primates.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's partially just because bats are kind of hard to study, and there are not that many people studying them in comparison to, say, rodents and primates.
Yeah, fair enough.
Getting back to the theory part of it,
yep.
Years ago, again, this was probably early 90s, I at this conference of the National Academy of Sciences, went out there with our laboratory, and I talked to Stephen Jay Gould while I was there, and I suggested to him that his punctuated equilibrium theory was never going to catch on with geneticists like me. But he didn't offer any clear genetic explanation of how you can suddenly get new organisms and, why they should be staying the same for millions of years, like he was talking about. But, it just seems like hocus-pocus to a geneticist since there's no genetic mechanism offered. But he said that, geneticists have to accept it because it's an empirical fact that the fossil record demonstrates that the typical organism comes into being abruptly and then just stays unchanged for millions of years thereafter. So we just kind of left that. We talked for about a half hour about it, and that was when I started thinking about, well, you could use hybrids to account for all of that, or really not just hybrids, but what I call stabilization processes, various natural processes that reassort chromosome, say like polyploidy, in a single generation, double the number of chromosomes that are present in an organism. Polyploidy is usually triggered by hybridization. It's closely associated with it. Or you could have like the number of chromosomes over a few generations in a hybrid cross or a hybrid zone being sorted out so that they're present in a new set that's partially derived from one parent and partially from the other, but it's stabilized out so that all the chromosomes are paired. I did a paper about that back in, 1995, where I built a computer simulation. And you could see, the dynamics are similar to that of punctuated equilibrium, where you'd have nothing going on for a long time, just a hybrid zone sitting there. And then all of a sudden, after, 1,000 generations and a couple of generations, you'd have a new type pop up and stabilize out of the hybrid zone. So,
interesting.
I wrote that up. I continue looking into the human thing. It's like long before this, I had become suspicious about the human origins thing, just because on the basis of the many, many anatomical features I list on the website.
Yep.
I just couldn't see, say, how primates, non-human primates, for example, would not even be infested by fleas, whereas humans and pigs are infested by the same flea. Out of the thousands of different kinds of fleas, they both are infested by Pulex irritans.
Mm-hmm.
So why is that? Or
why
do pigs get melanoma that's extremely similar to melanoma in humans, whereas cancer of all kinds apparently are pretty rare in non-human primates?
Okay, so throughout we're going to stop, and I'm going to point out the arguments to his points that he's making. No disrespect, but I would like them to be out there, I guess. And he does have an explanation, or he says, yes, you can make all these arguments, but his hypothesis takes care of all that. on a whole. So I'd like to make the arguments so people know what they are.
Okay.
Yeah. Another explanation for the flea and the melanoma is that pigs have similar skin compared to other primates. So pink skin would be an explanation for why they get melanoma, we get melanoma, and chimps don't.
Yeah.
The explanation of the flea is that we've been separated for a long time, most of the human species, from chimpanzees in their environment, just the environment.
Yeah.
And we've domesticated pigs, so they're in close proximity. We've probably lived in barns with them. It doesn't need to be that we're related to have fleas in relation to them. There's another thing that we get lice from gorillas, pubic lice.
Blah.
Yeah.
But you and this doctor are just trying to make me barf. I swear.
I saw that on one thing, and the scientist who said that was like, he just made this face after, like, like, how did that happen?
Exactly. And that's the face most people will be making when you tell them about gorilla pubic lice.
So they trace the genetic line back, and that the connection is to gorillas like a million years ago or whatever, how many years ago. It doesn't have to be anything unwholesome other than just maybe we shared the same nests as they did at some point. It's not a genetic reason, it's because we separated before then, before the lice separated.
But that's what he says, yes.
Well, he's saying that the pigs and the human fleas being connected is because of the heredity.
Why do we have multipyramidal kidneys that, when you cut them open, look just like those of a pig, whereas if you do the same with a chimpanzee or any other primate, they have a single pyramid inside. Kidney looks totally different.
Yeah.
It's just one thing after another. It's not just those two things, but it's like, you know, like 100 different things.
Yeah.
And so I didn't ever really publish anything on that because it's so controversial, but I continue to investigate it and think about it. And really, I went into genetics to try to understand the genetic aspects of that particular cross. It's like I was trying to think, you know, what sort of genetic evidence you could get to detect it. And I could never understand exactly why the genetic evidence didn't seem to be very clear. That was why I never really published anything about it. It wasn't even until maybe about 3 years ago that I finally realized, after having written this book on birds, and I keep seeing geneticists in these papers say, well, we're having trouble detecting this bird as being a hybrid because it's a backcross hybrid. As I explained on the website,
yep,
backcrossing actually wipes out, or at least makes it difficult to detect, genetic information that would otherwise, say, in an F1, the first cross, be easy to detect.
Yeah.
And once I realized that, it's like that was kind of like the last link that fell into place for me, because then I could understand why all these other backcross hybrids are hard to detect, why it'd be hard to detect a human being as being such, because if you have repeated backcrossing the chimpanzee, you move back 50% towards their genome sequence-wise with each backcross. Mm-hmm. And that quickly takes you until you're almost there, like 98% similar, like only maybe about three generations, say, if you started out at 80% different in the parents. At the same time, I realized that the genomes, if you combine them together, you don't really necessarily have to have sequence differences. What you have to have, I don't know if you know what a dosage difference is, most common example I think that everybody would be familiar with would be Down syndrome.
Yep.
If you get an extra chromosome 21,
mm-hmm,
then you have Down syndrome, and there's a particular set of characteristics that goes with that, that's recognizable. It's like a whole lot of different traits are affected.
Yeah.
Because of that, it's caused by just having that extra chromosome. No sequence change whatsoever. I mean, if you analyze someone with Down syndrome on the basis of sequence differences, you would never be able to detect that they're in any way different from any other human being.
Right.
All the genome surveys that they've done in the last, you know, 10, 20 years, they've come to realize that all different mammals and, you know, even probably even go out and, you know, say vertebrates share particular types of genes that serve particular functions. They're gene families,
yeah,
where You might have like several different alcohol dehydrogenases that help you deal with alcohol, or several different amylases that help you deal with starch, or you have any other number of things like, you know, 100 different actin genes that help you with the structure of your cells. But because all these genes exist, then they can also find in a hybrid pairing, say if you, in this hypothetical case of a chimpanzee and a pig, there would be similarity between the genes that are from pig in the hybrid and from the chimpanzee in the hybrid, so that when they go through meiosis, they would find each other and recombine with each other and undergo gene conversion the way I describe on the website, so that it would get wiped out with each round of meiosis. As you do the F1, then you do the first back cross, the second back cross, each time it's going to be homogenized and more wiped out, because these genes of these two sources, from these two sources, would be finding each other, forming heteroduplex DNA, and then the gene conversion mechanism would convert any mismatches on a 50-50 basis. So then,
go ahead.
Oh my god, it's hard. This is a hard episode. I feel like I'm standing up against a wall, and people are throwing buckets of water at me, and every time I try and catch a breath, they throw another one. I feel like every time he says something, I have to really think about what it is he's saying.
Oh, it's because he's going into really technical stuff.
Oh, man. It's hard.
But, so what bothered you there?
So what was he saying there? He was saying...
He's just saying that all of these processes would hide the genetics of hybridization. That's all.
Okay. Yeah.
So then it's undetectable.
Yeah. So that it's
at that point.
Well, I'm not saying that it's. I think that maybe on the website, I've been trying to rephrase a little bit. I should be saying that it's going to be difficult.
Difficult, yeah. No, I just meant at that
point. A lot more difficult than with an F1.
Because those specific genes would be undetectable if at that point.
Yeah, I mean, and I have no way of knowing exactly how extensively things have been erased.
Yeah.
It could be that they'll find, you know, someone, let's say, just does in silico chromosome painting of the human genome with randomly selected pig and chimpanzee genes. They may find some hotspot there where there are a lot of in silico hybridization with pig genes in one particular region. But it's something that I don't really have the capability of doing. But then again, I mean, if it's been so thoroughly homogenized back to chimpanzee, it could be that that's not going to happen. But I never did make the main point, though. Thing is, even without sequence changes, in the same way with a Down syndrome person, you get a particular syndrome. If you throw a lot of, if you change the balance of genes so that you have, say, a lot more actin genes, a lot fewer alcohol dehydrogenase genes, a lot more amylase genes versus, you know, pig or chimpanzee, then the sum, the dosage effect of all of that could give you a human being just by changing all the dosages. So, you know, you change all the different dosages for all the different genes in the whole genome. It could give you a pervasive effect, just like you have a pervasive effect like you do with Down syndrome.
Wow.
You can see what I mean.
Yeah.
And there would be no sequence differences necessarily that were detectable. It's just a matter of getting those different dosages.
Interesting.
So that's pretty clear?
Yes. So how strong do you feel this theory is? How strong are you standing behind it?
Well, I mean, it's my working hypothesis. I mean, yeah. I would be surprised if someone could somehow, with the many, many, many mm-hmm. different characteristics that seem to confirm it, that it would not turn out to be the case. I mean, you would expect, under the hypothesis that we have recently diverged from chimpanzees and long ago diverged from pigs, that chimpanzees and humans are just about equally different from pigs. Whereas if you actually, what I did is I went through all these different papers where people say, well, this is the distinctive features of human beings. And I made a list of that, and then I went over to pig. Or actually, I didn't go to pig at first. I just got this list, and I looked at it, and I thought, well, what sort of organism has these sort of things? And so about some of the obvious things, like, you know, lots of fat.
Yeah.
I started to think about that. And another one was like the things that are called ungual tuberosities on the tips of our fingers, under the tips of the fingers are these hoof-shaped processes
mm-hmm.
That other non-human primates don't have, like the thing about the fleas.
And so,
I looked to see what other organisms are infested by Pulex irritans, and pigs are the other big one.
Couldn't that be because pigs are domesticated? Because so couldn't it be that we share? So, for instance, are wild do wild pigs?
Yeah, well,
have
yeah.
fleas?
I think if any of these things, if you just take one thing,
yeah,
then yeah, you can make up a plausible explanation. But what I was getting to though was that you would expect, if you made the same sort of comparison between chimpanzees and pigs, that you find about as many characteristics that chimpanzees shared with pigs, but you don't find any, as far as I can tell, just like virtually nothing that chimpanzees have in common with pigs that humans do not.
Okay.
And so that's the big thing that to me is totally inexplicable under the other hypothesis of gradual divergence, whereas if you suppose that we've somehow obtained a lot of genes from pigs, then it all becomes that one assumption, it all is explained. So I think, I mean, it's my own opinion that people that think that way have a bias about hybrids and they're unfamiliar with, you know, the fact that you get a lot of fertile hybrids and
okay.
they occur naturally and
yeah.
they're unfamiliar, say, with the behavior of pigs and chimpanzees and their anatomy, and they don't understand how, you know, they might end up mating. So, I mean, that's my own opinion.
I think it's a perfectly valid point that what he's saying there is that people don't know a lot about hybrids, and people assume that since they know the mule is infertile, that they're not going to really look too hard at this hypothesis because they're going to think, well, obviously, they have a different amount of chromosomes. It's not going to work. And he's saying, well, that works in other animals. Some animals have a huge difference, and they can still make a fertile cross. So I think it's perfectly valid that he's saying, well, people need to take another look at this because they're not taking into account all of the animals that they crossbreed, all the birds they crossbreed, all these other animals that can crossbreed and produce fertile offspring. So I think that's valid, but I don't think that there's any other example of two species that are so far away, like a chimp and a pig.
No.
Being,
so. I think I know a couple more hybrids. A liger, that's one, isn't it?
Yeah.
And a zidonk? Is that one? I feel like I made that one up.
No, he's talking about that.
Okay.
A zidonk, yeah.
Okay. That's it. That's all I know.
So this ties into, like, tigers and lions are separated by 3 million years. They're still large cats. They still have this fairly similar anatomy, so it's not, like, as huge as pigs and chimps.
No, that's insane.
Yeah, I don't know how well, if you had an example of two different, completely different, like a bird and a reptile breeding, then I would say that strengthens the theory, but I don't think we do have that. So.
Continue.
One hypothesis is that humans and chimpanzees diverged recently, and that both long ago diverged from pig.
Yeah, so.
And under the circumstances, in other words, I'm rejecting that hypothesis on the basis of the anatomy. The anatomy, to me, strongly indicates that hypothesis should be rejected, because under that hypothesis, the clear expectation, at least to me it's clear, is that chimpanzees should have, not exactly, but approximately the same number of characteristics that humans do as far as sharing characteristics with pigs go.
Okay, so there he's saying that's a strong reason to reject it. I don't think it is a strong reason. I don't think it's a strong enough reason to reject it, because humans and pigs are so tied together in the last 10,000-30,000 years.
What you mean? You mean...
He's saying that they should have a similar enough differences, humans and chimps compared to pigs, that when he doesn't find it, he thinks that's a strong enough reason to reject that hypothesis, and then pushes him towards his hybrid hypothesis. I'm saying that's not a strong enough reason to reject that. Because we're so tied to pigs and separated, most of the world of humans has been separated from chimps for a while. I think that's missing the fact of all the different other factors that cause our biology. So our diet, our habitat, we've selectively bred pigs as well, based on the way that we domesticate them. So it's a hasty generalization. It's saying that this first thing, it should be like that, but because it isn't, then that points more to a hybrid. But I think it also points more to convergent evolution. So what do you think, Rachel?
Is that like A's or B's, B's or C's, and therefore all D's or F's? That whole, there's similarities between humans and pigs, and there's similarities between humans and chimps. So therefore chimps and pigs made human babies.
It's a little bit like that, but more subtle, because he is a scientist and you're not, so he has the base of logic.
Hey!
But I think
he may be Dr. Eugene McCarthy, but there is only one me, so there you go.
So did you check the other way compared to other primates? So like, you would assume that other primates have the same...
Yeah, well, what I was first doing is it never even occurred to me that it would be pig, and it's just like, if I start compiling these differences, they're saying humans differ from all other primates in this respect. Humans differ from all other primates in this respect.
Yeah.
It's like all these different things, and then I start thinking, well, it can't be a primate if that's the case. So I started to look outside.
I was just wondering if you checked it with other primates, you'd expect that chimps and humans would have the same differences as pigs, but maybe it was just a fluke. With chimps, and did you check it with other primates like orangutans and humans, or gorillas and humans, to see if they had the same?
Most of those characteristics that I list on the website don't apply just to distinguishing humans from chimpanzees. They distinguish humans from all of the primates.
Okay.
And so, you know, you could do the same thing with an orangutan, but I chose chimpanzee, and really ultimately bonobo is parent in the cross.
Yeah.
Because they're generally considered to be more closely related
to humans.
I mean, that's why I started looking at them.
Just to explain what I was trying to say here, that didn't come off that clearly. If he checked that humans and chimps should have roughly the same differences from a pig, and he found that they didn't, did he check chimps and orangutans and see if they had roughly the same? Or if gorillas and orangutans had roughly the same compared to a pig or not? I think you would need to do that to know if the starting theory is what you're jumping away from for the right reason. If the starting hypothesis is that they should have the same amount and he found that they don't, then maybe it's not just because that it's not to jump to hybrid, but it's that none of them do. In his hypothesis, they should have the same amount of differences where he thought that humans should but didn't.
Don't bring orangutan into this, please.
It's actually a pretty good argument.
No!
Because orangutans have a lot of physical characteristics that humans do that other non-human primates don't. So they have long hair, and they have bald foreheads with a hairline. They have beards. They have red hair. All things that humans have and no other.
Basically, you're calling
primate.
All ginger men orangutans.
No, what I'm saying is that's an argument that some people are using to say that we're closest related to orangutans, not chimps. Whereas the genome is telling us that we're closest to chimps, but there's some people saying, well, we have to look beyond the genome and look at the physical characteristics, which is what he's saying too, but they're saying that orangutans are closest. So it's a little muddied. I'm not sure the strength of being able to to say the genetics is wrong in either of the cases.
All I can think of is Paul Giamatti being a human orangutan. And that's what humans would be like if if humans were orangutan hybrids. Or, I guess, just talking orangutans.
No, Rachel, that... so the people who say that we're the closest, saying that we're closest back on the tree towards a common ancestor, we have a closer common ancestor with orangutans than chimpanzees. Some people are saying that based on some characteristics. I don't think that's necessarily true.
I thought it was bonobos, but I'm
it is bonobos.
Okay.
Is the genetic evidence points to towards bonobos. Some people, though, are questioning that.
Okay.
The same way he's questioning.
Okay.
In a bigger way.
I mean, what people call the common chimpanzee is probably a bonobo that's been slightly influenced by hybridization. That's the hypothesis.
Right.
I think in terms of...
Isn't the same true with a pig? Like, are you talking domestic pig or European pig?
Yeah, well, that's another issue. The domestic pig, I mean, some people have raised the objection that ancient form of pig, at least their claim is that it, you know, looks like a wild boar.
Yeah.
But actually, the domestic pig may not even really, you know, be the same animal in any sense. It's true they can produce hybrids that are fertile, but that doesn't make them, you know, the same animal. They have different chromosome counts.
The
pig has 38 chromosomes, and the wild boar has 36.
Huh.
And say the Altamira cave, you look at prehistoric depictions of pigs there,
mm-hmm.
and they look like they're fairly naked. And they have hair up along the top of the head and up at the shoulders, but you know they look. And also, the pig has a beard.
So then, different from a wild boar.
No, it's different. And so that objection is, you know, problematic to me because I don't think we really know the history of
domestic pig
versus you know the wild boar and what's exactly going on there. I mean, there are a lot of assumptions you can make, but I don't think you really know anything. So to throw out all this anatomical data that you actually do know on the basis of something that's speculative like that, I don't see any reason to do it.
Okay. Domestic pigs have 36 chromosomes?
38.
Whereas a chimpanzee has
48.
How often would that pairing work in a hybrid, though?
Well, like Zedonk, there are a couple of different kinds of zebras, but like between Burchell's zebra and a donkey, I think the difference there is Zedonk has 44 chromosomes and the ass has 62, I think.
Oh, wow.
So that's like a difference of 18, and the females of that cross have produced that cross offspring.
Okay. So not impossible.
And you have some mammalian hybrids that have these huge differences. Oh, there's Indian muntjac and Reeves's muntjac. And I can't remember which is which, but one of them has six chromosomes in females and seven chromosomes in males. And the other one has, I think, 44 chromosomes. So it's this huge difference. But they can produce offspring. And if I recall, I think they actually have a hybrid zone.
Oh, wow. So it doesn't seem to be a factor then, necessarily.
Well, I mean, it can be. I mean, I think it's a general rule that it's a bad sign for the fertility of the offspring if the parents have larger differences with respect to the chromosome number, but it's not a definite thing.
Yeah. So one thing that strikes me is the rarity of it happening. How rare do you think that the...
With a hybrid cross, I mean, some bird crosses say there's like one specimen known... you know, ever.
Yeah.
They just found a bird out in the wild, and the only one they've ever gotten, and they may never see one again. But there are other ones, say, Bullock's Oriole and Baltimore Oriole, they have a hybrid zone out in the middle of the United States that goes all the way from Texas up into Canada, and it's about 200 miles wide, and there are millions of birds in there that are produced every year, and they're, you know, like the mostly partially fertile. I mean, so you have this whole range of things. And so you have like a vagrant bird that somehow is usually in Eurasia, but gets over to North America and can't find anybody to mate with. And so on that rare occasion, it mates with somebody who produces a strange hybrid. I've seen cases of that too. It's all a matter of looking at a particular case. It might be, say, in this case, human case, you would start looking in regions like northeastern Africa and the Middle East, where you would expect that chimpanzees and pigs would have anciently come into contact, that you'll find fossil remains of ancient hybridization. But then
right.
You don't really know. You know, like, it's all speculative.
Yeah. So just for me, for the rarity of it, would it not have to happen a lot, though, for it
No, actually, it could happen only once. Hypothetically, if you produce one hybrid like that, there's the first cross, which is between male pig or boar and a female chimp. You got an offspring from it that was fertile. It would be almost certainly, at least in my mind, from my experience with hybrids, it would be a female because that's the way it goes with mammals.
Okay.
So if she backcrossed to chimpanzees during the early stages, you get a lot of inviable hybrids. But to my mind, and from what I've seen of hybrids, there's no limit to the number of offspring that could be produced from an initial number of individuals.
Okay.
I mean, you could go on, I mean, say, she might produce two or three offspring in the first back cross, and then those offspring could produce two or three, and on and on.
Okay. So I guess what I was thinking was that the event would have to be happen fairly often for the first hybrid to come about to be viable.
Oh, you're talking about the actual mating?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, kind of a risque topic to go into, but I do talk about it somewhat on the website. I mean, I looked into the behavior and the genital anatomy of both pigs and chimpanzees, and as far as the anatomy goes, it would definitely be
viable.
At least in my mind, it would be boar with female chimpanzee. And as far as the behavior goes, female chimpanzees, if they're threatened, squat down and present their genitals to the aggressor.
Yeah.
And pigs will mount virtually anything.
Okay. How do you like that?
Dave, I'm really unhappy. This is so gross.
Grow up.
Okay, go ahead.
Like, they use that for collecting semen for artificial insemination. They just put up a sawhorse with a, like, an artificial tube or whatever, and they will deposit your semen there.
Interesting. Yeah, see, I would assume that wouldn't come up, but if it's, I guess there you go, if it's in the behavior of the animals, then.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's true for a lot of crosses. I mean, it's not just this specific thing. If you look at dog and cat, it's always the male playing the role in mating there. Or I've even seen, like, you can look on YouTube, but I've seen on YouTube there are all these videos of rabbits and cats, like, doing it. And and it's always the buck rabbit and a female cat.
Interesting. Okay. Because I was trying to figure out how often it would have to happen I thought that would be a flaw, that it would have to happen so much between pigs and chimps that you would see it in the wild. Or you would see it.
In my basic understanding, I would think that, and I don't understand why it's not happening now.
No, he's saying that that it's in both of their behavior. A pig will do it with anything, and a chimp, female chimp, will display when threatened. So, behaviorally, it does make sense. I guess we don't have a lot of chimps hanging around with pigs just to see this happen, but that is one way to test it. And
but he doesn't want to do that. So you want to talk about that.
Yeah. We'll see. It's fine. At first blush, when I came upon it, I was like, what is going on here?
Yeah, dude, I mean, when I first, it first occurred to me, I thought the same thing.
Because I think that individual points can be disputed. Like you were saying, the differences between the gorilla and the forest pig compared to the chimp.
Yeah, I think that's a lot more sketchy, but it's strengthened by the strong evidence for humans. And it's a kind of similar across. If you start to think in terms of the one being probably right, then you start to think of the other one as being probably right.
I would think convergent evolution. So
each
of you living in the same place, eating the same thing, and so having the same characteristics because of that.
Yeah. And as far as convergent evolution goes, I think that's been used a lot by biologists to kind of discount data. I mean, they pick some particular trait that I've listed as being distinctive for humans and shared with pigs. Well, they would just say, well, that's systematic convergence. They're both omnivores, and so obviously they're going to share certain traits. And when you have all these different characteristics, they that relate to bipedality, you know, pig doesn't have that trait.
Yeah.
And then they still converge on those traits, then it becomes problematic. But it's true, though, that you can, like, try to, like, account for it in terms of convergence or analogy and homology, but it's not really convincing when you look at all the traits as a whole, at least not to me.
Okay. So the bipedality thing, I saw that you were saying that the glutes, the butt muscles, that is the one big thing that chimps and other primates don't
have. But there are a lot of other things, like, say, we have like
a, shape of
we have like a wide separation between the rib cage and the pelvis.
Okay.
So it allows us to flex our flex backwards so that our center of gravity comes over our hips when we're standing upright, whereas a chimp or, you know, other great apes can't do that because their rib cage comes almost down so that it touches the pelvis. There's no flexibility there, so that's why they have that kind of stiff posture where they lean forward, and then even when they're standing up, they're not really stable because they can't get their center of gravity over their hips.
Generally, that's thought in humans to be a result of evolution, though, is it not?
Yeah, but then there are things like, say, we have elliptical condyles in our knees. If you look down from the side, they're the end of the femur, the thigh bone, condyle, the bulge on the end of the bone is oval, elliptical in us. And in other primates, it's circular. And then they say, well, we have elliptical condyles because we walk upright. But any pig, cow, you know, like all these different artiodactyls have oval condyles. Single characteristic like that, you could say, yeah, it's helping us with bipedality, but then if you start looking at all the characteristics, it becomes far less plausible, because then you have to make up, I think of it as kind of a just-so story for each different trait and figure out why it is that we share that with pigs, and whereas it's a lot tidier, just from a philosophical standpoint, to just make a single assumption that explains everything.
Except that then don't you have to explain away the differences? That, say, pigs don't walk upright and neither do chimps, and yet humans do?
Yeah, well, that's what that chapter explains. It explains that when you combine certain traits from pigs and certain traits from chimpanzees, you can get an organism that not only walks upright but really can't get around effectively any other way. That's something you do see in hybrids a lot. You see emergent traits that are the result of combining factors from two different parents. Say, an example of that sort of springs to mind is this sunfish cross that I looked at, where one of the fish had great gills that were really good at getting oxygen out of the water, and the other parent had super efficient hemoglobin that could carry oxygen really well. And so the hybrid, they determined, had this extremely good oxygen processing system, and that was the reason why it was so much more active than either of its parents.
Yeah,
so it's just the combination of traits can lead to an emergent feature.
It's really fascinating because it's in that in-between area where I'm still unsure.
But
so half the time I feel like it's on shaky ground that all of these assumptions that he's building up, if he has a whole bunch of them, it's still the whole thing is on shaky ground. But what he's saying about the convergent evolution thing is kind of true, is that there's things like bats and birds that have wings and they came about in the same way. But we know they're not related. And then so an evolutionary biologist would say, well, okay, that's convergent evolution. And then so they pick anything that is similar in two different animals that isn't come about by ancestry. They're saying, okay, well, it's convergent evolution. It is kind of like just taking the data and arguing it away with this kind of cure-all to the problem is just saying, well, convergent evolution solves that problem. Like, what he's trying to do is saying, this thing directly is from a cause and effect, not just happened to create the same thing with no relation. It's interesting. I feel like that, in some ways, is stronger, what he's saying. So that's it's a weird area.
You like it. I can hear it in your voice.
I like the simplicity of it, yeah. I don't like, so what I definitely think he needs to do is to try and falsify it.
Right.
There's something there. There's something there, but there's also something intuitively that feels wrong about it. And I don't know if that's from my subconscious or if it's from my emotions.
But I feel like you're not emotional about it, though. I feel like it's more me that's emotional.
No, but I think you're just always, everyone's always emotional. As much as you want to take emotion out of it.
Scopes trial, they thought they had discovered a new human, ancient, you know, prehistoric human in Nebraska, and they introduced it into trial, at least some molars that they had found, and it turned out eventually that those were actually pig molars. But then you also have another class of characteristics. The theory I'm offering is brain expansion is that we obtain this new type of circulatory system from pigs that's not present in chimpanzees. Basically, what pigs can do is they have these things called emissary foramina, the holes that lead out from the brain to the outside surface of the skull and connect in with the veins on their ears and in their skin. And they can pump heat out of their brain through these emissary foramina. And they also have what are called plexuses, these very fine networks of arteries and veins in their throats and in their skin, whereas chimpanzees and other non-human primates, I know specifically that chimpanzees do not have. They have virtually no circulation in their skin. I've seen the figure somewhere, I think I even mentioned somewhere in the website, that pigs have a circulation in their skin that's about 100 times what's actually needed to support the tissue, and they use it to dissipate heat. Right. And so if you graph brain size to body weight ratio in primates, you can see it like hitting a ceiling that it can't seem to get past. Like, it gets largest in the gorilla and chimpanzee. But the idea is that this new system that was brought in from pigs allowed us to
take advantage of that.
To rapidly. It's kind of like the difference in my mind between, say, an old Volkswagen Bug, which has air-cooled engine, can only be a certain size. If you have a lawnmower or a Volkswagen Bug with an air-cooled engine, but to go beyond that, you have to have a water-cooled engine. So what we have is a water-cooled brain. Essentially, in a chimpanzee, it's a passive heat transfer where it's just any heat in the brain has got to move out passively through the skull or to get to the outside and dissipate. Whereas in humans, you can actually increase the amount of circulation to your brain and the circulation out through the emissary foramina to these heat dissipation centers. I shouldn't even say centers because it's essentially the whole outer surface of the skull by actively pumping it out and pumping it, say, at higher rates when you're running or something and you're producing a lot of heat, you can overcome those problems.
Yeah. Probably the last thing to talk about is the predictability of it.
And with respect to...
So one of the staples of a good theory is, can it predict things? Does it have predictability?
Well, the only problem I have with that is I've looked at it so thoroughly that I have trouble finding new things to look at because, I mean, it predicted, like, every time I would find one of these characteristics that's supposed to distinguish us from other primates. The prediction was that I should find a pig, and then I kept finding it and finding it and finding it. Like every time I go to the science library, I find another one.
Okay.
And so for me, the prediction has been borne out incredibly.
Okay.
But I think that if somebody wanted to verify it, and I'm not saying that I want to do this or have anything to do with it, but it's actually try to produce a hybrid.
That's what I was curious about, yeah.
But I mean, but it's like,
you get into strange ethics
like
of it,
really.
You have to wait. Now I'm recording.
Such a crabby buddy.
You just don't listen. So do you want to do that? Do you want to try it and verify it? See if we...
What?
So breed a chimp and a pig together and see if it...
No, because I don't need to because I don't agree with the hypothesis.
Well, then that would prove it wrong, Rachel.
That's fine, but...
What I'm asking you really is, would you do that experiment?
No.
Why not?
Because it's not... What's it going to do? Even if this theory is right, what difference does it make? It doesn't make a difference.
What?
It doesn't. What? Like, I don't care.
Really? You'd still eat bacon?
Yeah.
You monster.
You're so calm.
I mean, it's something I'm completely uncomfortable about. And I actually, I wrote a novel in which it's actually available on Kindle called The Department. And one of the major characters in there is the F1 hybrid.
Okay.
And, characters get together and they make one down in the sub-basement of the genetics department. And so I go into the ethical or emotional problems with doing something like that.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like something I'm just totally uncomfortable with. maybe because that character, in my mind, is something fairly real.
Yeah.
Interesting. I just wouldn't ever want to meet her in the flesh.
Yeah, I think that's a lot of the reaction. Rachel's reaction to me showing her this was being grossed out. What?
A little personal attack against me.
But wait a minute. So you just said you wouldn't care if it was true.
I don't care. I just don't want to see a pig and a monkey doing it. I don't. You know me. People know me. I'm me. I have a couple of exceptions to the rule. I think pigs and chimps are cute, and I'm a bit of a prude as well.
I feel like if you think about a human ancestor being a pig, that doesn't sit well with people. Have you got that reaction?
Actually, I was expecting a lot more negative reaction than I've gotten. Like, surprisingly positive. I mean, or even saying it's a joy. It's a joy to read about this. Like, I didn't expect that. I mean, I was troubled by it when I first started thinking about it, but as I think about it more, I just think that you have a couple of gametes that got together, and they contain certain chemicals, and by this almost, I don't want to say miraculous, because it's not the wrong combination, but it's like kind of amazing coincidence that they sorted out to make something that's strange, different, and that I actually like a lot. I like people a lot. I mean, I like them better than pigs or chimpanzees.
I agree with that.
It's got a lot going for it, I think, as far as, I think that it's not really anything to be grossed out by.
No, I don't think so. I think you have a lot ahead of you to go against all the people saying it's convergent evolution, all your detractors.
Yeah, but I mean, I can see. I mean, I've seen all along how they could think what they think, and I think it's mostly because they're unfamiliar with the data that I've compiled. They're unfamiliar with my arguments. For example, people that construct phylogenies, if there's rampant hybridization everywhere, producing new types of organisms, then that's going to undermine their whole career. Because they'll have to go and find something else to do because that's not even real. I mean, I'm not saying it's not real, but under this hypothesis, it's not real. If you think about it, what they're doing, I could do, say, with the objects in my basement. Like I get the washing machine and the dryer and the various other things down there and arrange them into a tree on the basis of their traits. Say, like everything that's metal and everything that's not, that goes into one part of the tree, that goes into the other part of the tree, and everything that's above a certain size goes into the subtrees and on down the way until you, say, washer and the dryer are a lot alike. They're cubes that are white and they're metal. And so on the basis of that, you might say that they're right next to each other in the tree, but I mean, that wouldn't mean that they shared a common ancestor, a recent common ancestor, just means that you can arrange them into a tree. I mean, all that idea of a tree being real could be overthrown by this, I think. If it really pans out, it will overthrow it. Anybody wants to know about hybridization, I have already a lot of information about mammalian hybrids in the section of the website about mammalian hybrids, or if they want to know about bird hybrids, there are like 5,000 different crosses they could look at in my bird book from Oxford Press. It's called Handbook of Avian Hybrids of the World.
Okay.
Or if they want to go into the ethical issues, they can look at my novel, The Departed.
Okay.
Okay, great. All right, well, thanks a lot. And as I say, if you've got any other questions or thoughts, just contact me again.
Great, thank you.
Okay, thanks, bye.
So that was Dr. Eugene McCarthy on the human-chimp-pig hybrid.
There's a lot to think about. Maybe come back to it in another episode or something.
Yeah, definitely. Because I'm still bewildered by it, because I went into it thinking it's anomaly hunting, it's convergent evolution, and gradual evolution explains all of the things, and so why not do that? But now I'm a little confused because I'm not championing the hypothesis. I don't know yet. I can't figure out what my issues are with it and how strong it is.
He gets around a lot of different things. He finds his way around it. Like the genetics, there isn't a genetic marker to say that pigs and chimps mated to create humans. That isn't a strong genetic marker for that, which you would think there should be, but then him being a hybrid scientist for 30 years says, well, the back crossing would make the genetics disappear, so he kind of gets around it that way. I think what he needs to do now is figure out things that, if he found it, it would falsify his hypothesis. And then that makes it science, because if he's not doing that, then it still seems like it's anomaly hunting.
Okay.
But yeah, it's tricky.
It is tricky. It's hard.
Okay, so...
It's a sticky subject, I think.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
Do you want to do another installment of pseudoscience or?
Pseudoscience!
Sure.
Okay.
Why not?
Okay. So this week, in honor of the chimp hybrid, We're gonna do cryptids.
Okay.
So one of them I made up, and then the other two everyone else made up. We've got the jungle walrus.
Okay.
We've got the Canvey Island monster.
Nice.
And the beast of Aberfoyle.
Interesting.
So the jungle walrus lives in the Congo. It has a poison-tipped tail.
But it's a walrus.
But it's a walrus. It lives in the jungle.
Okay.
The Canvey Island monster is a large is a large pink bipedal fish. And the beast of Aberfoyle is a large water rodent the size of a hippo.
So, I like the idea of the walrus. I feel like the Aberfoyle one...
What?
Yeah. The other two sound so demented that they're probably true. So I think you made up the Beast of Aberfoyle in honor of the Loch Ness Monster.
There's a lot of Loch Monsters. So is that what you're going with?
Yes, I think you made up the Beast of Aberfoyle.
Okay. And you got it right.
Yes! What did you do? Oh my god, it's my first one!
Yep. I should have done it in order. Well, that was a quick one. That was good.
It's because Nessie is real. And that's, yeah.
What? What?
But hey, I got one. It's because the Loch Ness Monster is real.
It's real.
Yeah. My parents saw it on their honeymoon. True story.
Ergo, QED, it's real.
Ergo, these are V, D's are P's.
God, the end is nine. I would like a pirate show with me.
In its own little entity is Fanshawe. I don't know.
I don't know if that's accurate.
I don't know.